In the first hour today, we'll be talking about Social Security and its future. One of the things that has been known for a long time is, and we know it by looking at demographics, there's going to come a time, probably about within the next 5 to 10 years, when there'll be a lot of folks in this country, the people that we call the baby boom generation, retiring, and they will start to expect benefits to be paid to them from Social Security. Now, as far back as the early 1980s, it was recognized that this was going to happen, and Congress decided that something should be done about it to make sure that the money was there to pay those benefits. And in 1983, there was an increase in Social Security taxes. The idea was to create a surplus so that at about 2010, when baby boomers start to retire, there would be money to pay them. And also a little bit after that, some years after that, there was a provision enacted basically that said the government couldn't touch that. That money was supposed to be specifically for that purpose. And a lot of Americans believe that there does indeed exist in Washington somewhere a bank account that all of the Social Security money goes into and that benefits will be paid from. However, that's not the case. This morning we'll be talking about that with our guest. His name is Alan Smith. He's an economist. He taught economics for more than 30 years to college students. He retired in 1998 as professor of economics at Eastern Illinois University to become a full-time writer. And we'll be talking about some of the information that you will find in a recent book that he's authored. It's titled The Looting of Social Security. The subtitle is How the Government is Draining America's Retirement Account. Carol and Graff is the publisher. It's available in paperback, not terribly expensive. And the point that he makes in the books is that despite the fact that the government was not supposed to spend the contributions of the people into Social Security, that it has. From that day, that is from the 80s until now, the government has continued to spend that money. A little bit more on our guest, Alan Smith. He has authored a number of books. His first, Understanding Inflation and Unemployment, was published in 76. He's also written a high school textbook, Understanding Economics. His other books include Demystifying Economics, the book that makes economics accessible to everyone, and also another titled The Alleged Budget Surplus, Social Security, and Voodoo Economics, that book published in 2000, along with the other one, Demystifying Economics. He, for a period of years in the early 90s, wrote a syndicated weekly newspaper column on the economy and has also published articles on the economy in the Denver Post, Philadelphia Inquirer, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He's talking with us this morning by telephone, and as we talk, questions are welcome from people who are listening. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and also we do have that toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number. We'll pay for the call. 800-222-9455 is that number. And then the local number for people in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, that's 333-9455. Well, Dr. Smith, hello.
Hello, David.
Thanks for talking with us today.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Maybe we should go back, I guess, to start at 1983, this year when it was recognized that there was going to be this very serious demand on Social Security. We knew that we were going to have a lot of people retiring. So back in the early 80s, that was recognized. They passed an increase in Social Security taxes in order to try to create a surplus to make sure that there would be enough money to pay the benefits. Let's start there. What happened then?
Yes, that resulted from a 1982 presidential commission known as the Greenspan Commission. It was headed by Alan Greenspan and also co-chaired by the late Senator Patrick Monahan of New York. And this was a presidential commission to study Social Security, long-term funding problems, and make recommendations. They soon concluded that when the baby boomers began to retire, there would be no way to fund that unless a bank account, if they prepay a portion of it and get it a big surplus there, so then when we went through this problem with the baby boomers, we could dig in to that. So in 1983, Congress enacted into law the recommendations, the president signed them, and as of today, that increase in 1983 increase in Social Security taxes has generated $1.5 trillion. that is supposed to be in the Social Security Trust Fund available to fund the baby boomer retirement, and there's not a nickel there. It's all been spent on other things.
That gets at, as I said, I think what is a basic kind of assumption that I think people have. They have this idea that there is some kind of, as I said, in Washington somewhere, there's some sort of special bank account that's got the name of Social Security on there. And the idea is that the benefits that the money that comes out of their paycheck that goes into Social Security goes into this account, and then benefits to retirees are paid out of that account. The fact of the matter is there is no such account. The money that people that comes out of their paychecks to go to Social Security just goes into the general revenue pool with other sources of revenue the federal government has, and then out of that are made the payments. So they're actually, the idea that there is some sort of fund, some sort of special account, is just not true.
Well, there is such an account. It's just empty. The Social Security Trust Fund, as it implies, this is where the money is supposed to be held, and they will show on their books, their records, that they have $1.5 trillion in assets. The problem is these assets are essentially worthless government IOUs. What the government does is when they borrow that money, they issue a special, it's called a special issue government security. It's not like other securities that can be bought and sold in the bond markets. It is something that the federal government must repay on its own. I mean, it has no, there's no way they can get any money from it unless the government decides at some point to repay that. So they put in these pieces of paper or bookkeeping entries, and it shows that they have $1.5 trillion. The AARP that I'm having quite a fight with right now, and I'm a member of the AARP, they are misleading their membership either from lack of information or other motives. They are telling the members of the AARP and all of their literature and on their website that there's plenty of money to fund full benefits of Social Security to the year 2042. And they are using, for that basis, these assets. But these assets, I like to describe them as a bank robber was robbing a bank vault, and he took time before he left to write out a note, this is how much I took, just in case you want to know. That's what these government IOUs are. They are simply bookkeeping records of how much the government has taken out of the fund, but no provision of any kind has been made for replacing that money, and there simply is not going to be anyway, short of massive tax increases or massive borrowing, that the government will be able to pay it. And this means in 2018, right now the Social Security Fund, because of that tax increase, is still running big surpluses. They're supposed to be going into that fund, but it's not. In the year 2018, the Social Security revenue will be less than the benefits. And so from 2018 on, there'll be deficits, and they will be unable to pay full benefits after 2018 unless they can dig into their bank account, dig into this fund, and the only way they can dig into that is if the government comes up with the money.
Hmm. Well, that, I guess that raises a slightly different kind of question about whether or not the government intends to fulfill the commitment to pay the benefits promised. I'm assuming that nobody thinks that the government is going to default. It's just a matter of how they're going to come up with the money, where they're going to go to get the money when the time comes to pay.
But this is the whole problem. This is, I'm engaged in the discussions on AARP message boards and so on. So, well, surely our government wouldn't default. Surely they will pay it. It's not a question of will or will not. It's a question of can or cannot. The amount of money, for example, take the year 2035. This comes out of the recent 2004 Social Security Trustees Report. In the year 2035, the federal government, to pay back interest they owe plus enough on the principal to pay full benefits, has to come up with $747 billion out of the general fund just to pay this, to keep Social Security afloat. In that single year, 2035, the next year it becomes 900 and something billion. And so I don't think that anybody can foresee. We've had these big tax cuts when they were not affordable. We've been brainwashing the American people for the last 25 years that they can have their cake and eat it too, and nothing is worse than a tax increase and nothing better than a tax cut. How will they get the American public to support massive tax increases to come up with that kind of money? That's the question I keep bringing up. I see them defaulting simply because I don't see an alternative.
Let's talk about the Budget Enforcement Act of 1990.
Yeah.
As I understand it now, what this did was it said to the government, you can't take money, the money that exists in Social Security, you can't use that as a part of figuring out what your budget is, how much money you've got, what you owe. In spite of that fact, though, governments have continually used that money, counted it as money in the bank that they had when they were making their calculations about, you know, what they owed and what they had. I guess one of the, you know, the questions is that if that had not been allowed to be in that calculation the way that this legislation of 1990 said, then what would things have looked like on the deficit if we had never counted the Social Security surplus and went all the way back to 1990? I mean, what would the deficits have actually looked like?
Okay, the they're reporting this year in round numbers that we're going to have roughly a deficit of about $500 billion, which is astronomical in and of itself. That's not the correct figure. The correct figure is about $650 billion, because they take the Social Security surplus, which will be in the neighborhood of $150-160 billion this year, and they subtract that from their general budget deficit and come out with this phony figure. That's why Senator Hollings was the one who pushed through so hard that 1990 act, because he had been for years speaking out on how atrocious this was, how fraudulent, and so he thought if he got a law that things would change. Well, it was passed, and George Bush Sr. signed the law, and nothing changed. It says, for example, that they can't even use that in reporting the surplus or deficit. That cannot be taken into consideration. And nobody ever hears this deficit figure of 650 or something. So it's just been total violation of the law. In terms of the fund, what was supposed to happen with that money, you see, the problem is that the law, as it now stands, and it certainly could be changed, but the law says that any surplus money from Social Security has to be invested in the safe government IOUs, in government securities. Okay, the intent was that they would go out and invest them in IOUs that already existed, held by the public. These are bought and sold in the market, and they would pay down the national debt during this period since 83. Which means if they had done that, the national debt, which is $7.1 trillion, would be $1.5 trillion less, and the government would have spent $1.5 trillion less during that time period if they had followed the law and they'd followed what the intent of the commission was. Instead, the government saw this as just like new spending authority. So instead of using it to pay down the debt, they just accumulated new debt. They just, every year, they used that for a general budget. It's been used for everything from pork barrel to probably national defense and everything. It's just gone into the general fund. But the really atrocious thing that is so disturbing to me now, under George W. Bush, it is being used. Social Security money is being used to fund these massive tax cuts that go mostly to the top 5% of our population. That's the only place any money is available. He has run deficits in all other programs. And to tell American people we need these massive tax cuts, he is using Social Security money paid by working Americans. It's a very regressive tax because there's a cap on it. And he's taking money out of the pockets of working Americans and giving this to these very, very rich people. If the American people knew that, if I could get that on a billboard in along every highway, and we could really get that. If the American people knew that Bush's tax cuts are being funded by working Americans by looting their Social Security money, they're just being outraged. But, you know, it's hard to get that message out.
I have a couple of callers, and I promise these folks I get to them. Let me just ask a basic kind of question, because the fact that we are headed towards a crisis or potential crisis with Social Security has been recognized, and people have said, well, there's a number of things that either we could do or maybe we have to do, including raise the age at which you can get benefits, put a cap on what sort of benefits you can get, possibly also an increase in Social Security taxes once again. If you did all of those things, how much would that help when it came time to pay this big bill that's coming due?
You see, that's a totally different problem, and this is why it's so hard. The idea of privatizing, this is smokescreen. The problem is that if that money is paid back, if that $1.5 trillion were there, the Social Security Fund is solvent and able to pay 100% of benefits until the year 2042. And at that point, or long before that, you can have reforms of the kinds of things you're saying to get us beyond 2042. But it is now, because of the looting, it's 2018 that we have the crisis, and the first step has to be to replace that $1.5 trillion and stop additional spending of Social Security money. After that is accomplished, then we do need to make some of these reforms for the long term.
And I gather that you don't support the idea that has been proposed mostly, I think, by Republicans, the idea that younger people now coming into the workforce and coming into Social Security should be able to take some portion of their contribution and self-direct that into some limited range of choices, but probably it would end up going into some kind of mutual fund. Privatizing at least in part the system.
So much of what they should be able to, in theory, it sounds like a good idea. The problem is that the fund is heading toward bankruptcy, and the moment you start taking, you say, okay, you don't have to pay all your taxes this year. You can take some of that and put it in private investments. That just suddenly cuts off the flow of income and brings doomsday a lot closer to us. From a practical standpoint, they don't have enough revenue coming in now. And to actually cut revenue AARP is very opposed to that. And in theory, it's probably a good idea to work something of that sort out, but you can't do it. You have to do that in addition to what we now have. You can't divert some of the money that's insufficient already into another direction.
We have a couple of callers. We'll get right to them. Let me just introduce again our guest. We're talking with economist Alan Smith, taught economics to college students for over 30 years. He retired in 1998 as professor of economics at Eastern Illinois University to become a full-time writer. He's the author of a book on the subject here we're discussing. It's titled The Looting of Social Security, and it's published by Carroll and Graf. If you're interested in economics, you might also look for his 2000 book, Demystifying Economics. The subtitle is The Book That Makes Economics Accessible to Everyone. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. We'll start off here with a caller in Champaign County and line one. Hello.
Hi. I agree with your critique of the profligate, looting by the current administration, and actually by previous administrations, too. I think this current administration is looting more than just Social Security, but Social Security is perhaps the biggest cherry to loot or something. But my criticism is on a number of levels. I think this idea of privatizing is really lunacy. I think that the Social Security system should be a government Social Security system. And I also think that by looking at it as simply a pension plan, that's part of the distortion. We see one of the things that people point to all the time are the demographics, that there will be so many fewer workers supporting each, retiree in the future. Well, you're sort of focusing on that. One is focusing on that and not looking at the rest of the economy. What's going on in this jobless recovery is productivity is going way up, and I think there should be a way for this productivity enhanced economic system to to fund Social Security. Now, that's talking about general revenues and corporate taxes and things like that, which are anathema to perhaps both sides right now. But it's really where the wealth is being created, and it's not just by workers, it's by what the workers have produced over time, which is these productivity gains. So they should. This is the way I think it should be. The equation, that simple-minded equation about there are fewer workers working. But I also wanted, that's sort of a general systemic kind of question, but I also wanted to reference your ex-colleague Mark Weisbrot and his colleague Dean Baker from the Center for Economic Policy Research and their book about, I forget the exact title of it, but basically they assert that even by the calculations that are in hand, and a lot of those need to be analyzed, but I mean, we're talking about a problem in, I guess, 36 years, 35 years, 4 years, who knows what kind of productivity gains. It's not a Hail Mary argument to say that we really, I think this is being used to, this kind of dire circumstance argument is being used to say, well, we have to privatize, scaring young people, scaring old people. So I think there's a lot of things going on here, and that's a pretty involved question, and I think I have to go back to what I was doing, so I'll just listen to your answer on the air. And I forget the title of the book, but it's available through CEPR.net, including their other web-available analysis about Social Security, which they've been pretty prolific about writing about. It's a heretical kind of point of view that it's not really as bad. I mean, of course, the looting and the priorities are military Keynesianism is awful, et cetera, but... it's an interesting argument that isn't heard that often, though I have to credit Focus for having both of them on in the last year or so, I think. Anyway, thanks. I will listen.
All right. Well, go. You can take that in whatever direction you want.
Okay. Well, I guess I would have difficulty finding much to disagree with the gentleman. I agree with most of what he said, and Mark Weisbrot was a friend of mine. His office was right across the hall from mine. He and I used to talk about these kinds of things. I haven't read his book as such, but I think there's a lot of truth in the notion that people are using scare tactics. Let's face it, the conservatives have hated Social Security from day one. Barry Goldwater wanted to get rid of it. Ronald Reagan wanted to make it voluntary. It is absolutely a program that the conservatives want to get rid of, and they are using these scare tactics. And this notion of privatizing as a solution is crazy because that doesn't change the demographics. The long-term problem, as he pointed out, is there are fewer and fewer people working to support those people who are retired, especially after the baby boomers retire. But there is nothing magic about that says that we have to stick with FICA, or the Social Security payroll tax, as the only source of funding that. And if we do that, we can raise the cap. The cap is now $87,000. And I think it's that's what it was this last year. So a person who makes $1 million, they pay $87,000 taxes on any sale, and the rest of it is just totally exempt. So that's one of the things that can be done in terms of reforming, raising the cap there. There are various other sources, but let me just make one point clear is that we hear an awful lot about the negative aspects of big government, and that's probably true. But I don't have one bit more confidence in big business than I do in big government. Enron and the others can be examples. The fact that they would privatize it wouldn't do it. It's making the assumption that privately it can be done better or more efficiently. I think what one of the things is they're striving for the votes of all these stockbrokers and so forth. Imagine the bonanza if suddenly all this additional money is available for private investment. That's part of the motivation of the plan. So I agree, first of all, that privatization, from my personal standpoint, is not desirable. It never was. The program has operated since the 1930s, and it's operated pretty well most of the time. What we need to do is a little fine-tuning on the system. It is very hard to look that far down the road, as he suggested. There's all kinds of things that can happen. And so I'm not very concerned about the, I shouldn't say very, but I'm not nearly as concerned about the long-term problem that happens after 2042. There's things we can do to resolve that. What I'm concerned is something that most people don't know about, and that is that $1.5 trillion of their money has been stolen. I use the word stolen because it's borrowed if the government pays it back. If the government never pays it back, and I don't see how the government will, and I don't think there really is an intention on the part of current people in government. This is the reason that Alan Greenspan set out the alarm. You know, we're overcommitted. So I guess I would agree with almost everything he said along those lines and point out that most people think that it's they hear these figures of along the lines of the long-term run. The problem I'm dealing with, my book deals with, is something that most people don't know about, and that is that's going to create problems as early as 2018. The money has been taken from the Social Security Fund.
Let's talk with another caller. This next person is in Urbana on line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for talking about this topic. It seems like almost nobody talks about it intelligently and really tells people what, you know, how the country's finances are. It's to me, it just seems like the U.S. finances really just seem terrible. It's hard to describe how bad they really are. You know, politicians talk about, once in a while you'll hear them talk about the deficit. Well, we have a deficit, and maybe we have more, and maybe in 5 years we'll cut the deficit in half. And I just don't understand that because they never talk about the debt. I mean, I really have a feeling that when politicians say, we'll cut the deficit in half in 5 years, I really think a lot of people listening to that think that they're saying we're going to cut the national debt in half in 5 years, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. The deficit is just the amount of money that we're borrowing more and more every year, and we are going to be more in debt. The total federal debt right now is $7 trillion. And the United States population is about 300 billion people. That is about $20,000 to $25,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. And if you do it for like a family of four with a couple of surviving grandparents, that's like the federal debt is like $100,000 to $150,000 per family. And yet you know the politicians talk about cutting the deficit in half. As though that's going to solve our financial problems.
Oh, right on. my book deals with all of that. In fact, it was when I first started writing, it was more emphasis on this federal finance and on the national debt and so forth. But then the Social Security part came in as an important aspect. Let me just put things in a little perspective for people because I have been trying to shout from the mountaintops on this national debt thing. In 1981, shortly after Reagan took office, the debt ceiling, which is something that it's the limit how high it can go, and then they just keep ratcheting it up, was not $1 trillion yet. It was shortly after Reagan took office that the national debt reached $1 trillion for the first time. That means that all the presidents from George Washington through Jimmy Carter in almost 200 years of our history, accumulated $1 trillion. Well, Reagan added a second trillion in 5 years. By the time Reagan-Bush 12-year period was over, it was $4 trillion. So in those 12 years of Reaganomics that so many people want to proclaim as such a great thing, it's the most disastrous thing ever happened to the American economy and American budget. In those 12 years of Reagan-Bush, the national debt went from $1 trillion to $4 trillion. It quadrupled. Okay, since that time, it has gone up by another $3.1 trillion. It's actually, I would urge anybody who really wants to keep track of this, the U.S. Treasury Department has a website called the Debt to the Penny, and I just went on there a couple days ago to Yeah, and as of last Friday, the national debt was $7.131 trillion. So we, you know, I'm always slow. You know, I knew it was $7 trillion, and okay, and it'll soon be $7.2 trillion. The rate of increase in about a 23-year period of going from $1 trillion to $7 trillion is just absolutely unbelievable. It boggles the mind. And what's worse is that George W. Bush is now running deficits of approximately $500 billion a year, or a half a trillion, which means in 2 years, every 2 years, he's had as much the national debt as all those other presidents did in 200 years. And maybe I better just, because the gentleman was talking about the confusion, and there is a lot of confusion, the deficit is just the difference between what the government spends and what they take in a given year. For example, this year, they're saying that we'll have a deficit of $500 billion. That means that they'll spend $500 billion more than they take in, but it's actually more than that if you use true accounting. The deficit, each time you, in order to pay for that, you have to add to the debt. The debt has been accumulating since the beginning of our history, and that debt does not go down. It was supposed to go down. This $1.5 trillion of Social Security money was supposed to be used to pay down the debt so that when we got to this point, we could borrow it back to keep the Social Security fund solvent. So I just can't emphasize strongly enough that there's no way you can communicate to the general public. We're headed toward a fiscal train wreck. I'm right now working on a proposal for a new book with my publisher, and the working title I'm working with right now is The Bankrupting of America. It started with the American government. I was just going to talk about that, and then I started looking at consumer debt and so forth. We cannot continue at the level, and I think anybody would realize that if you take 200 years to get $1 trillion, and now you're adding $1 trillion every 2 years, we're headed toward a calamity. And I just want to scream that. I want everybody to see that. And as he said, now they'll say something like, we're going to cut the deficit in half. Well, all you have to do is go back and look. George W. Bush said there will be no return to deficits under my administration. We won't have any deficits. And now he's saying we'll cut it in half in 5 years. You can take that as a grain of salt.
Well, I appreciate the comment of the caller. Let me just real quick, because we've got some other callers here. I'm sure that there probably are economists, or at least people in Washington, D.C., who would make the argument that debts and deficits don't matter, and that in the long term, what we can rely on is the fact that the United States is too big to fail. You know, there's just no – the United States is so big, the economy is so big, the government is so big, that they sort of want to pat us on the head and say, look, everything's going to be okay. So what I hear you saying is that is not the case.
No, and I think the vast majority of economists would agree totally with me. There are very few economists worth their salt who would say what you're saying. Let me just point out that at the time of the last big tax cut, Bush, the 2003 cut, 400 of the nation's top economists, including 10 who had won the Nobel Prize in economics, signed a statement of protest pleading with the government not to take this irresponsible tax, put a full-page ad in the New York Times explaining to the American people this Bush tax cut was not anything to help the economy. It was going to make it much worse, and pleading. And then Bush went out on the stomp around the country and says, vote for my tax cut. That's a vote for jobs. And just totally ignored. If 400 of the top people in the Pentagon took a position, would he go contrary, or in the medical field or anything else? This problem is not the creation of economists. Economists have been cut out of the government decision-making.
Let's talk with another caller. Next is someone in Charleston, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, 2 points. It's kind of folklore, but Roosevelt, who helped bring Social Security into existence, was accused of looting it for the benefit of World War II. Is that correct?
He may very well have borrowed funds from it. There wasn't very much in it at that point. I mean, I actually do not have in my mind the figures back that far, but before the 1983 tax increase, we had 7 years of deficits in Social Security. So Social Security has never had any sizable surplus in it, and I don't think he could have looted very much if he did, and if he did, that was probably paid back. So I don't know. I haven't heard that one. I've heard a lot of things about FDR and Social Security, but I haven't heard that one. But generally, we have not had any sizable surpluses in the Social Security fund until this 1983 legislation, which was to take care of the baby boomers. And so the opportunity to loot hasn't been there.
Okay, the second point is, it's obvious to me that capitalism is in its synthesis, and therefore outdated and unworkable anymore as a economic system, despite, I think it's called Keynesianism, isn't it?
Keynesianism?
Yes, Keynesianism, to prime the pump and make it work some more. Well, since the U.S. already consumes 48% of the world's goods, and the thirst for more, and dragging all the natural resources and converting that into money, it's obvious that there are limitations to that, and that we should be thinking of a new paradigm whereby human society can surely continue to evolve for all the world. And so long as the strangulation that capitalism provides, look at what's happening in Iraq now, and that's over money, that and oil. That's not, you know, all those euphemisms that Bush and others have put up, but it's the preservation of capitalism and its system and the people who benefit by that. And I'll just ring off and wait for an answer. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm afraid I'm going to have to disagree with the scholar. His sentiments and what he's saying, there's a lot of truth, but it's not the fault of capitalism as an economic system. It's the fault of how it's been implemented. Capitalism is the most productive, the most efficient way for any economy to operate, but it has to be, so many people talk about Adam Smith and the Wealth of Nations, published in 1776, of how capitalism was supposed to work. That kind of capitalism, I think the gentleman would be happy with. I think he'd be happy with the results of that kind of capitalism. What we have today is not the pure type of capitalism where you have many, many buyers and many, many sellers and nobody's in a position to take advantage of anybody else. So it's not the basic system itself, but the implementation of it. It is things like compassionate conservatism that is neither conservative nor compassion. If you think in terms of conservatives in the past, one of the things they've been most known for is balancing the budget, not running big deficits. There are a lot of fiscal conservatives today who are just outraged with Bush. There's no conservatism at all with regard to his fiscal policy, and I have not seen a hint of any compassion in any of his programs. But, boy, it makes a nice sound, doesn't it? Cheney was just using that a couple days ago in a compassionate nation and so forth. The problem is with the implementers, with the people and the way it's being implemented.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Alan Smith. He taught economics to college students for many years, retiring in 1998 as professor of economics at Eastern Illinois University. He retired to become a full-time writer, and one of the things that he says he's particularly interested in is economic illiteracy and wants people to know more about and understand better economics. He's the author of a basic book that you might want to take a look at that's titled Demystifying Economics, the book that makes economics accessible to everyone. He's also authored this book that we're talking about here this morning, which is titled The Looting of Social Security, How the Government is Draining America's Retirement Account. It's published in paperback by Carroll and Graff. If you're interested in looking at the book, you can head out to the bookstore and find it. Questions are also welcome here. We have about 15 minutes left, a little bit less, maybe. And we have some other callers here, and we'll go next to line number 2 and a caller in Urbana. Hello.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention the name of that book. The first caller was trying to get, and that's by Mark Weisbrot and Dean Baker. That's called Social Security, The Phony Crisis. And then I had a couple. I was going to call originally about what the first caller talked about, that the more you talk about Social Security being bankrupt and all that, the more it gives power to the people who want to privatize. But actually, I think I'd rather talk about something else, and that is the I don't know if you, the whole thing that's going on here is that and you were talking about how conservatives for so long wanted to get rid of Social Security. Somebody ought to really make it more graphic. I mean, when somebody like on The Sopranos, that show on HBO where the mob boss tries to get his percentage, that's essentially what the entire financial sector is trying to do to the rest of us. I mean, right now, I pay taxes to a institution that does not take a profit, and they give me protection. They've got police. People like Tony Soprano will muscle in on that by creating a problem, and that way they get the percentage. And that's exactly the same thing that the whole entire financial sector is trying to do. And you've pointed it out, your guest pointed it out, that there would be such a windfall if Social Security went privatized. You know, they're just salivating about that. I mean, they just want it so badly, because people point to Social Security and say that's socialism. And you know what? It is, and it's good, and people like it. And it's and again, referring back to the first caller, people distort what Social Security does. It's a family, and it's basically kind of a family insurance thing. It helps people where people are disabled, and helps people where there's death in the family. You know, it does a lot more than just act like you know, some savings account. So I don't know. I just wanted to.
Well, let's get a we're getting into a
kind of
show on time. Let's get a response from our.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with a lot of what he said, and certainly this privatization is not some kind of a new concept. I mean, it's always been around by people, and they are indeed trying to use scare tactics. But before, I want to just take a short digression here to make sure I get this in. As a result of reading my book, a group of citizens started a national coalition called the Citizens Coalition for Social Security Restitution. Actually, two people out in Idaho walked into Boise, Idaho bookstore and saw my book, and after reading it, got in touch with me and asked if I could help support them and so forth, and they are really working hard, and they have a website, and I would like to see as many listeners as possible to at least visit that website and see what they got, and it is www.restoresocialsecurity.org, restoresocialsecurity.org. They are growing rapidly. They are getting involved, and it's all volunteer. The two people who started it don't make much money. They're musicians by profession part of the time, but they have a lot of knowledge of economics and so forth. So I would just challenge everybody who's listening. If everybody who's listening would just go, if you have access to the web, to www.restoresocialsecurity.org and just look at it. Now, they've got places on there for you to sign petitions, write your congressman, all kinds of other things, but I'm trying to help them as much as I can because they're to get people to become aware of that. So that's, and one of the things you'll find there is the very thing that he mentioned. There is no basic problem with Social Security today except for the looting. As I said, until the year 2042, the Social Security Fund would have sufficient funds to pay 100% of benefits.
and then they'd have enough to pay 70% of benefits for a long time after that. It has to be fixed before 2042. But I'm looking at the crisis in 2018 when we don't have enough revenue coming in to pay the benefits, and the problem then is, where are you going to get the money? It's supposed to be there in that trust fund. He mentioned insurance and so on. That is, you should really, I like to think of Social Security taxes as insurance contributions. That's essentially what it's always intended to be, a program where you pay premiums in, and most people think that it goes into an account and you get these printouts, your name and how much you've got in and so forth. Well, that's the way it was supposed to work. The way it actually works is this year they'll take the revenue that comes in Social Security and pay all the benefits that are due, and all the rest of the money will be used by the government for other things. And so there's nothing that's paid in this year that will still be around next year, let alone 10 years from now. People who retired 20 years ago are being paid out of this year's revenue. And so that is something. It's actually being operated like a giant illegal Ponzi scheme or pyramid scheme, and you know how those things always end. So the big thing that I want to emphasize, because people immediately think, well, you're talking about this long-term reform problem, that's not what I'm talking about now, although I'm very aware of that. I'm talking about the money that is supposed to be in the bank, the money that's there that our federal government has borrowed, I say borrowed very lightly, because embezzled or stolen is a better word. And it's happened in every president since the funds first came about in 1983. So it's not just a Republican thing. Clinton was involved some, and the first Bush and so forth. But right now it's being used to fund these tax cuts, and I think that is obscene.
We have one more caller, at least have time to get them in. Line number one, this is Urbana. Hello.
Hello. As long as your topic was economic illiteracy, I believe, I'd like to bring up a matter of definition. We refer to conservatives today and liberals, and we don't seem to be cognizant of the shift in the meaning of the term conservative. Before 1960, perhaps, almost all conservatives were Southern Democrats. There were very few of them in the American political system. What Roosevelt had labeled conservatives were really traditional liberals in the Republican Party, men like Taft and Dirksen here in Illinois. And what has come into the political stream is true conservatism, and it is a very different economic outlook from what probably were laissez-faire liberals.
Okay, yes, sir. The terms liberal and conservative don't mean much at all anymore that we can depend on, because everybody sees them differently. I think you have to look at it in two ways, and that is fiscal conservatism or liberalism and social conservatism or liberalism. I would consider myself to be a fiscal conservative. They need to balance that budget. They need to have some. I am a fiscal conservative, but I am a social liberal, because I believe in doing something to give some equal opportunity to the masses in this country. And so the term and liberals, it used to be a good word, and Rush Limbaugh primarily, and along with others, have over the last several years just turned it in. All you have to do is call somebody a liberal, and it's a dirty word. And I want to know what's so nerdy about compassionism. I mean, liberalism, in my mind, is trying to provide equal opportunity. It's trying to abide by the principles of our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence. Our founding fathers would turn over in their graves, every one of them, if they knew what is going on and being sold as Americanism today.
I think you make a useful distinction. Thank you.
All right. We're at the point here. We're almost out of time. I guess I've just one point I want to underscore to in response to the situation that you've outlined. If indeed we said today, we started doing what in 1990 we said we were going to do, and that is taking the Social Security, the money that's supposed to be going into Social Security and truly setting it aside, putting in the lockbox, that phrase that we heard so much of 4 years ago, and said no longer will we use that to as a way of balancing the budget, and we will not spend it for anything other than what it's intended for, then would we be okay? Would we have the money there to pay the benefits?
Well, there's two steps. That's the first thing we have to do, and the second thing is to repay this $1.5 trillion that's already been looted. Mm. And that could be set up. What I would advocate is I'd like to see the government come out tomorrow with a moratorium saying enough's enough, we're not going to spend any more Social Security money for non-Social Security purposes. But we've already spent $1.5 trillion. Set up some kind of legislation. It has to be an installment plan over a period of several years to repay it all, make it legal and binding. That $1.5 trillion has to be repaid, and they have to stop looting. And President Bush said that he would not touch, he said this in his State of the Union address, after he was president, he wouldn't touch Social Security. And most people, I think, believe that. So the lockbox might have seemed like a silly idea, but what it was doing was calling attention to a problem that was perceived 4 years ago and is not perceived today. Most people think that's all been taken care of.
Yeah. Well, we will have to leave it at that because we've come to the end of the time. Again, if people want to read on the subject, they should look for the book that we've been talking about. It's titled The Looting of Social Security by our guest, Alan Smith. It's published by Carolyn Graff. He's a retired professor of economics from Eastern Illinois University. Dr. Smith, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you, David, for having me.